This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek, show number 685, with guest TJ Huddleston, recorded on July 23rd, 2026. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home and sometimes into your shed. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios in a not smoky Bellevue, Nebraska. TJ, smoke's made its way to you guys. Is it cleared out? Are you guys okay? Everything's okay?
I think we're good now. I mean, I don't see anything myself. Hopefully I'm not breathing in, but I'm sure good. I am or something, you know?
Yeah.
Last week was awful though. I mean, you could see it in the distance and you didn't really want to be outside that much. It just felt weird.
You don't have an air temperature or an air quality sensor nearby to track?
Not that I track or anything, no. Yeah. I've never really been interested in air quality, and I feel like it's because everything I've read about air quality sensors is they all vary so drastically, and I'm just not nerdy enough to, I guess, distinguish the difference.
Do you have a weather device of any kind? Like, you know, weather vane, not a vane, but what are they?
Weather station.
There we go. Thank you.
Yeah, we have an EcoWit weather station, and that's what we use a lot for our smart garden and everything like that.
Yeah.
So the weather station's nice, specifically because we make automations based off of it's raining. So if it's raining, you know, the irrigation system doesn't go off or stuff like that. So if it's below a certain temperature, it doesn't go off as well. So the weather station, I think, is a great thing to have.
Do you have, I know Gavin's got the, you know, the moisture sensors for the grass and stuff. Have you gotten to that level for watering and those kinds of things?
Oh man. Yeah. Gavin got me into the soil moisture sensors. So we're even using the same ones. We both, and I think we buy all the new ones that came out anyway, but we use the EcoWit soil moisture sensors. Mm-hmm. I like them because I don't use them for my lawn. Gavin's problem is that he uses them for his lawn and they actually stick up. And so he's broken a couple of them.
Yeah.
Mine are all in my raised garden beds, and so I don't have that problem. We use the soil moisture sensors. Some of the newer ones have like temperature built into them. I don't think I really care about the soil
temperature.
Yeah.
For grass,
I don't know if I do.
It's important for grass. So
yeah. I'm getting rid of all my grass though. So I'm going to all pollinator at this point.
All front? No. Out in the front?
The front yard. Have I not showed you pictures of this?
No.
Oh, can you bring them up? Sure. Well, let's see if I can
find
one.
We'll get to the rest
here.
Of the show here in a second. let's bring this up.
Yeah,
I know your front was pretty grassy. You got, you know, you had a little distance between there and the road.
Yeah.
Previously
we turned like half of it into like a pollinator garden, and that's going pretty well. All the stuff is growing pretty good. But this part, we've decided to go through with the rest of it. So in my town...
Hold on, share your screen for me so I can see it. I can't... Uh-oh. Too much smoke in the area?
I don't know what that's for.
What?
All right, give me 1 second, sorry.
Yeah. We'll let you come back. We'll post the show when TJ comes back. We'll post the show with some world-class show notes at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. If you are a regular subscriber, thanks for all that you do. We have one $5 plan. That's $5 a month. If you want to join the team, it's helpful in some of the stuff that we do. It allows me to kind of keep things rolling here and purchase stuff that we talk about on the show. So if you want to join that team, theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. And then don't forget to click on the Amazon affiliate link at theaverageguy.tv. So jump out there, go to theaverageguy.tv. In the upper right-hand corner is a link to pass through to Amazon. Click on the link, jump through it. Helps the network out. Appreciate it. And that will help us actually in the long term get that going. TJ's back. He's now showing us his, oh, good heavens, TJ.
What's
going on here?
Yeah. Oh so in my town, they actually just implemented it this year, but they have a permit for what they call a pollinator garden. And it's basically so that if you wanted to convert your entire yard or a portion of your yard to pollinator plants, the city can't like come after you and fine you for like an unkempt yard, right? Yeah. Because that's always the argument with pollinator gardens is that they always kind of look like butt. I mean, they don't look good sometimes. It's natural, you know, it's what nature looks like, and it doesn't always look good. And so we're like one of six people that have got a pollinator permit for my area. And so what I've done here is if you put down clear plastic on top of the grass and everything, after a certain amount of time, it'll kill it. And that's they call that solarization. And so it basically just cooks the grass and kills all the stuff underneath it. And so instead of digging up the grass or putting down cardboard and compost and other, you know, there's a ton of different methods you could do to get rid of grass. This kind of just gets rid of it over time. And so we've started this project. We anticipate the plastic being on there for about 2 months. So it's going to, you know, bake all the grass. And what we're going to do then at that point is plant a bunch of wildflower seeds and then let them winterize. And then kind of next year, everything will just go crazy at that point.
There's a, excuse me, there's a technique of once the grass dies, letting it turn brown and then burning it down to kind of remove the grass seeds. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I haven't seen that too much myself, but I don't know if my city would like me burning my front yard.
Oh, it's only for
and on top of the gas line, you know what I mean?
It's
so
only for a morning. I mean, yeah. We've got Zoysia out front, and of course that dies, you know, that's a Bermuda grass and it dies. I haven't done this in a long time, but this spring we burnt it down. And it just kind of, you know, that Zoysia grass is super thick, and so it gets rid of all the thatch and all the things that are in there. But oh, I understand it. So it's so the whole the left side you've had for how long?
The left side's been going on, I think, for 2 months. Let me see if I can get a picture of that at some point. But yeah, so we've done a couple of different methods of getting rid of grass. The other areas of the yard, we've put down cardboard, and then we put down compost or mulch on top of it. Yeah. And then basically the cardboard will break down over time, but you know, before that, it'll smother everything. So there's a couple different methods.
You've got to replace that though too, right? Every couple of years, you got to kind of pull all that stuff back, put new stuff down, and put, because eventually, I mean, weeds get everywhere. Even with the, you know, folks put down that black, you know, they're like, oh, I'm
yeah, the fabric,
the weed fabric, and I'm never going to have weeds. And you're like, no, they're going to grow in your compost.
The problem with those is that it just grows on top. You know, all the material just settles on top of it, and then the weeds just grow in that because weeds grow wherever they want to. So, now I'm not too worried about that part, honestly. Supposedly it's fine. The biggest problem we have right now is crabgrass. We have a ton of crabgrass from like the neighbors and everything like that that just come into the pollinator garden. And so it's been a real challenge with that. So.
Yeah. Have you in the pollinators? Have you planted clovers? Do you have some clover stuff in there at all? Are you using it as a ground cover at all? Or
yes. On that? So we're doing some clover this year actually. So that's what we're going to plant this fall in that other section that I just showed you with the plastic. Yeah. This picture I'm showing here on the screen, this is what we did for the other side, and so we just basically layered up cardboard. Then we put 2 or 3 inches of compost on top of that.
Yeah.
So it's pretty easy. The problem with that though is you have to store cardboard forever.
Right.
So I had cardboard in my warehouse for like 5 months or something.
Forever.
So.
You're just like, hey, anybody got any cardboard you want to get rid of?
Literally just walking around cardboard.
You're just setting it down, staking it in, trying to make sure. Yeah. It looked a little wet. You can wet that down. It'll shrink a little bit, right?
Yeah, that's what you do. You wet it down a little bit, and then you put your stuff on top, and then you just basically keep wetting it down, and it'll smother the grass eventually.
John's got a suggestion. John Biggs says, just burn it the next time the smoke rolls.
That's true.
You'll know any difference.
You know, I didn't know it was going to roll through, unfortunately. If I did, then I would have planned it better, you know?
Do you have any tech out front for the wildflowers? Do you do anything from moisture sensing or any automatic watering or anything going on out front then?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Jim, because of course I do. I mean, I have to have everything watered. So I sent you some pictures here. Let's see if I can pull one up here.
Oh, pull them up. It's a lot easier.
Yeah, it's easier.
We'll just have you do it.
I know sometimes you like to have them yourself.
This tonight's fine. You just bring them up and we'll share them that way.
But yeah, the problem with the smart gardens I've figured out is that you really need a bunch of different watering options. I think we talked about it, you know, the previous time that I decided to build my own irrigation system this year. So I installed, you know, 3/4-inch PVC throughout the yard, and I have hose or sprinkler valves everywhere. Basically every single bed I have has a sprinkler valve. And so I can automate the watering per bed. And I have a soil moisture sensor in each bed as well. And so it can give it exactly how much water it needs depending on what is growing there. But the one thing I realized is that you really need a bunch of different watering technologies to kind of like encompass everything. Because there's not just like a one size fits all for watering.
Well, so you're saying like you can't do everything drip.
Yeah, you can't do everything with like the sprinkler valves and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, there's got to be different things because, you know, our problem, for example, is that we're starting a lot of different garden beds. And so like I can't just run a sprinkler valve every single time I'm starting a new garden bed, right? And especially if it's only temporary, because the point of a native or a pollinator garden is that you basically don't need to like maintain it after a little bit. And so like, you know, you need to water it to get it started and everything. But after that, you really shouldn't have to do anything. And so getting a sprinkler valve for the whole area doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Right.
And so this picture here is one of the sewn off sprinkler valves. We'll include that in the notes as well. But this thing is great. It's Zigbee. I think it's $35. And it connects directly to Home Assistant if you got Zigbee already. But you can just turn it on and off with Home Assistant. And it connects to a regular hose. And so what's nice is I can just drag my sprinkler to wherever I want to. And this just this is already automated, right? And so I just adjust the sprinkler for the new area and the schedule stays the exact same.
Nice. How much time are you spending outside moving stuff around? Are you doing it daily? Or are you every couple days? What's your thoughts on that?
No, I have a lot of things going on, Jim, of course. I mean, the other device I've actually just recently invested into is it, I think, I don't know how you actually say the company name, but I'm going to call it Aiper, A-I-P-E-R. It's the Irisense 2, and it is a smart water sprinkler. So this thing is pretty cool. I'll show you a picture here. This thing is pretty cool. It kind of looks like a little fan, you know, like a little cylindrical little fan of some sort. Yeah.
This tower fan.
What's nice, though, is you can tell it exactly where to water. And so you can set up a couple different zones. It's kind of like a robot lawnmower, right?
Right.
You have a couple different zones you want to control or cut with your robot lawnmower. The same thing with this Aiper here. And so we have a couple different zones going on. We have like a grape wall that we're creating. And so it goes and waters those individual grape plants. And so it sits a little bit of water in that grape plant and then it goes to the next one and it sits there and goes to the next one. So that's pretty nice. And then it has like an overall watering zone as well. And so if I wanted to water my grass or right now what I'm doing is using it to water my pollinator garden. Mm. And so we put a bunch of new wildflowers down in a blueberry patch we're building. And it just waters that whole area there.
Are you going into the app and giving it targets? Is that kind of how you, is it targeted? Like, does it turn itself on and you kind of dial the water over to the area or how does that work?
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know how you are with technology, but I kind of just start using technology and I figure out how to use it. I feel like that's mostly a guy thing anyway. You kind of just jump in and you just figure it out. I mean, you go to the exact area you want to water. It's got three different modes. The two that I use are called, I think they're called spot watering or yard watering. And basically the spot watering just goes to individual areas or the yard watering does like a whole area. And it's pretty easy to use. You just drive it around and you show it exactly where to water. You mark it on the map and then you go to the next area.
Retail and something like this, they always seem pretty expensive.
It's so expensive, Jim. I'm not going to lie to you. I think the retail is like $600, but they're normally on sale for like $350.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so, when you go to the website and they're like 25% off if you buy right now, right?
I mean, I use the Amazon gift cards to get it. So like, I feel a little less bad about it. But the only thing I'm worried about is longevity. Obviously, it's an IoT device. Right. And so it's $350. It's an IoT device. Is it going to last as long as like a regular sprinkler? Probably not. You know, a regular sprinkler can last decades if you treat it right.
Yeah.
But this thing, if I get 5 to 10 years, hopefully that's good. The convenience, I think, is worth it, though.
Home Assistant? Does it
does tie into Home Assistant. Okay. And you can tell it exactly which. So in the app, kind of like the robot lawnmower, you can make different zones. And with Home Assistant, you can tell it exactly which zones to water and everything. So the app is actually really nice.
How long do you leave it? As you're spraying it in an area, like you say, it goes, you spray it in an area and then moves to the next. Does it suggest how much water should go there? You have to tell it like 30 seconds or what's your watering routine?
Yeah. So it gives you a couple different options. And I actually don't know the difference in why, but sometimes it offers inches or it offers a time based. Okay. And so some of my zones are time-based and some are inch-based. I don't know why that is, to be honest. But it's usually like 0.10 inches or 0.25 inches or a minute or two per area. And it probably breaks down depending on like how you're watering. So if you're doing like spot watering compared to like, you know, an overall area watering.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a science to it, right? I do a version of this, except the automation is me. So I go out and I stand on my deck in the shade, and we put in a new cherry tree. And so I just stand there with the stream and I just shoot all around it, just kind of water it from afar. Mm-hmm. And then we have some cannas over on the other side that have been beautiful this year. This has been a great year for them. I turn like this. I don't even move it. Just turn, water those. I am my own IT, you know, or outdoor watering device associated with it. I do like, even, you know, my gardens are pretty close. I use just a wand, mm-hmm. Watering wand. I just go down the side. I've actually found I've been doing a lot of work. It's kind of therapeutic to go out there. And do you ever go out and just watch? Okay, it's automated. It does it on its own. Do you go out and watch it water, and do you find it therapeutic at all?
Yeah, I mean, I like to just spend time outside anyway. So, yeah. We built the nice deck that I think I talked about last time, and it's, you know, kind of just like to hang out there and spend some time. So it's, and you know, I like automating the watering and stuff because I feel you, it is therapeutic and stuff, but it's just so tedious watering so many garden beds. I don't miss them.
Yeah. You have a lot more. I've moved mine in. I've got some along the deck now. We tried some vegetables on the deck because I felt like I could control them better. It was a terrible experiment. My pots aren't big enough, and that 100-degree weather we had just murdered.
Oh yeah.
Right. Just murdered.
Yeah, especially in the pots, they just dry out so quickly.
You have to water them every hour.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horrific. I do have one cucumber that's hanging on and is hanging off the deck just exactly like I wanted to. And it looks like it's going to be a good size, but we'll see if it gets to the, we'll see if it makes it. We're having 100-degree weather next week too. So we'll see how it goes. But I've been trying to really get the right plants in the right areas based on the watering. You know, I've got a neighbor my neighbor next door has got irrigation, and so he's watering his lawn, and it kind of comes over into my yard. And so I put a bunch of hostas in that spot to just take advantage of the water. It was shady, and they this year have done amazing. Like, I haven't had to water them one time, you know. And so I've been trying to take advantage of those kind, or natural drainage. You're on a on a pretty flat piece of property right there.
No, it actually it goes down towards our house, and so our whenever it rains, our yard is kind of swampy. And we have very heavy clay soil, and so the water takes a little bit.
Will the gardeners take it in? No,
they definitely don't. So we that's the reason we do raised garden beds. We actually dug a couple beds into the ground, and we refilled it with like brand new soil. We bought, you know, compost and potting soil and all that good stuff. And the water would just stay in there. It doesn't have anywhere to go because of the soil. So that's why we do raised beds everywhere.
Right. No, that makes sense.
But yeah, honestly, finding like native plants or plants that are low maintenance, I think, is the best way, because there's just, I don't want to maintain my garden. You know, you got to go out and pull weeds and stuff anyway. And so if my plants can just survive on their own with minimal effort, then that's what I'm all about. And I have a couple like heavy, you know, watering plants. Like, we have a bunch of arborvitaes and stuff like that we're growing for privacy. And so those require a ton of water, but everything else, I don't want to water.
Yeah. Have you done sunflowers?
We grow a lot of sunflowers.
Yeah, they are.
Our problem is those squirrels or chipmunks always eat the heads of them.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, it literally just keeps growing, and, you know, it gets 6 feet tall or whatever, and there's no heads on it or anything. So,
yeah.
We got to figure out something with that.
We had no sunflowers in the neighborhood. And then my neighbor next door, it's a jungle at his house. Like, it's just a jungle. Ed, I hope he's not listening to the show, but it's a jungle over there. He started with sunflowers. They came over to my yard. And last year, I just was like, hey, I'll just let them grow. If they grow, it'll be great. And then my neighbors across the street was like, when I took him down, he was like, finally, I can see you. You know, I was like, oh, that was a problem. So I didn't let him grow between the neighbors this year. But I did let him grow in a back spot where I've had real difficulty getting things to live. Mm-hmm. Like, if I had grass, I'd even planted clover to kind of help with that. But it sits on a western facing exposure, and we just get such a hot sun in the summer. Yeah. It was burning all that out. You know what? Like, the sunflowers just fixed that right up. They're like, bring it on. And I haven't watered them once of this year, and they just continue to thrive. However, I've noticed sunflowers are all now all over the neighborhood because yeah. the birds carry them off and or the wind blows them, right? Whatever. And so all of my neighbors have a little bit of a sunflower patch going in their house right now, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So we, last year we were the sunflower house. And so we, I buy, I think it's called like black oil sunflower seeds. And I give the birds, obviously, I put them in the bird feeders and everything, but every time I give the birds some, I literally just throw some out in the yard or out in the garden or whatever, and you find little patches of sunflowers growing everywhere because everybody's storing them in different areas and everything. Yeah. So they do travel.
The big ones, you know, the big head ones, they eventually, they'll cross-pollinate with others and they get smaller and smaller and smaller, you know, because they'll cross-pollinate with smaller ones. And they won't be as big anymore. So if you want the big sunflowers, you need to get the, you got to kind of buy the seeds and
grow. Yeah, the mammoth sunflowers, the ones I've grown before, those ones are huge. And then we typically grow what's called super snack sunflowers. And those are the ones you can actually eat.
Have you ever dried? You ever taken them and dried them out?
Yeah.
Nice.
Isn't it? So they grow giant heads on them. The seeds are huge. So they're definitely worth it.
Yeah.
If you like sunflower seeds, obviously.
It's a weed in some places, but it's a really easy plant to get an area. Don't require a lot of maintenance, doesn't require a lot of water. They'll kind of make themselves, you know, they'll make themselves their own way and get there. Provide great shade, and they're great for the birds. I mean,
beautiful too, right?
The last fall, we cut ours all down and I stacked them up in two spots in the yard. And all winter, the birds were moving in and out of those sunflower patches. And it was just great. It was just great for the birds. So that's a nice, for me, I like to kind of provide. I thought all the seeds would have fallen out. And we were still getting birds after the winter in the spring going through those, pulling seeds out of there. And so I thought, oh, this is nice. Now, those areas where I stacked them up, guess where the sunflower seeds grew the most, right? So you got to be careful. You got to be careful where you put them. Well, that's super cool. So you're going to winter, you're going to let that die for the fall, for the end of the fall. You're going to put those gardens in, you're going to seed them in for the winter, and then nothing, right? You're not expecting any growth until spring. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Yeah, something I didn't realize that actually makes a lot of sense is that a lot of native plants actually need to winterize that's how nature works in the Midwest. And so if you want to plant like actual native flowers and stuff like that from seed, they tell you to plant them in the fall and just let them go over wintertime because that's what they actually need. So
you don't think they winterize those seeds in the factory when they're making?
Some people do actually. So I bought some, there's little violets that grow around in our neighborhood everywhere. And those, they actually, when I bought them, they had winterized them already.
Yeah.
So that way when you get them, you can just plant them immediately.
Throw them in there. So no, it's super cool. So let's move to the backyard because last time we chatted with you, we were talking shed over the, we're talking solar in your shed over the course of last time you were being on here and this time you've put some new tech in the shed. So what's going on inside the shed?
Yeah. So I think we talked about, I've had a solar panel and an EcoFlow battery in there for 6 months or so ever since I got the shed. And that works fine. You know, I think actually the last time I was on, I talked about this and I missaid that it was a 400 watt panel. It's actually a 200 watt panel. Yeah. And so I have a 200 watt solar panel. I have a 1,024 watt hour EcoFlow battery. And the main idea when I got it is I just need lights out there. Like I'm not trying to run table saws and everything else, but obviously being able to turn on lights and, you know, maybe charge some things would be nice. And so that's what I started with. I bought it all during, you know, Black Friday / holiday sales. And so, you know, the solar panel was $100 off Amazon. The battery was $330. Pretty cheap, you know, to get power into the shed. I could have obviously ran power from the house to the shed myself, but that would have been pretty expensive. And technically, I would have had to get a permit and all this stuff. And so I was trying to avoid that, right?
Right.
And so, you know, the solar panel has been working great. And I thought recently, you know, I've been wanting a resin printer. And I've been wanting a resin printer for a while. And I decided to buy the, Elegoo Saturn 4 16K. This is a pretty big resin printer. The reason I waited so long to buy one is because technically whenever you have a resin printer, it's supposed to be ventilated. When you get the resin out of the bottle, you're supposed to be wearing, you know, gloves and a mask, and you're not really supposed to breathe it in. We have a small house, so not really a good place to put a resin printer. Mm-hmm. We already have a regular printer, and I don't think we're supposed to breathe that in either, but that's not as bad. You know, the resin printer smells pretty bad. So I got the resin printer and we put it in the shed, and it's been working great. You know, honestly, we can run the printer all night. Oh. The battery lasts, you know, throughout the night and has a little bit of juice in the morning. Yeah. When we had the fog or the smoke last week, it didn't recharge the battery, obviously. No, not a lot of sun that day, but it's been fine. So it's been great. I'm going to add another solar panel. I got it in the mail today. So it's technically a 200 watt panel, but I'm only getting like 100 watts during peak, and I haven't adjusted the angle or anything like that. Yep. So I'm sure there's a little bit I can do with that. There is
this, and that's it. You can chase that wattage forever. You know, I've got mine on the porch. They're on a hinge. I can get all the degrees that I want. And then you're out there all the time monkeying with it. And at one point I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to leave it. I'm creating three positions, right? I'm going to have a summer position, a spring, and a fall.
Yeah.
And just kind of, well, I'll probably move it to a winter, to be honest, because that's a long winter. And actually, sometimes during the winter, I get more power than I do in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought my summer, you know, those panels heat up a little bit and they're not as efficient. So you might be seeing some of that right now. Some of it might be your angle. I was going to say, for that battery, you have a similar battery to what I have. I have a little bit more than you, but another panel or two.
Yeah.
And it's going to, like, three panels for you, three 200 watt panels for you would actually, on a good day, be more than you need, but on bad days would be just enough. So that would be kind of, you know, one of those things for you to think about there.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm aiming for, right? Because most of the days I don't have a problem. Until I got the printer in the shed, actually, I didn't have any problem at all. So it was never a big deal, but the printer's in there. I'm unfortunately not going to keep the printer. Honestly, the resin printer, I don't think it's my thing, but also the software keeps crashing on my computer. So I'm on the public beta of the newest macOS software. And so I'm sure that's part of it, but I only have a 14-day return window. Right. So do I want to risk it, or it's a lot of money? So at this point, I'm going to return the printer. I'm going to look at different options, maybe a smaller one or something.
TJ? What are you printing on it?
That's the thing, is I'm not really printing anything that's significant on the resin printer. So I got it, so maybe we can print, you know, earrings and stuff like that. But I didn't realize that, like, the majority of stuff for resin printers, like the models and stuff, are all paywalled. So there's a lot of free stuff out there, but not as much as like a regular printer as well. Maybe I don't know where to look. But it seems like all the websites are more paywalled than regular 3D printing. So that's also my struggle.
What's the difference, the resin versus whatever?
FDM, I think. I don't know what FDM stands for, to be honest. Yeah. But the resin printer is actually, it's literally a liquid. And it's supposed to get finer detail. So if you're printing, like, you know, people always say, like, Warhammer and those kind of figurines and stuff like that, that's what you'd want a resin printer for. So I might get a smaller one at some point. I just don't need a big one. So, you know, I think the idea of it's pretty nice. But the other problem is, obviously, being in the Midwest, I can only have it in the shed for 6 months out of the year or whatever. Yeah. So because the rest of the year it's cold. So
are you taking the battery in the winter, or you can leave it out there?
I do have to take it in the winter.
You don't have to,
but it sends me a warning. It's like, hey, it's too cold. You should.
It just can't charge, right? Sure. I mean, it'll be fine. It'll shut all stuff down, and it'll be like, and you can't charge it. You can't turn it on. You're going to need to warm it up before you turn it on.
So I usually just take it inside at that point, and then if I need to go in the shed and do stuff, then I bring it out. So
I've thought a lot about that. In fact, I bought the Blue Eddy and both the Blue Eddy and the EcoFlow. Well, mostly the Blue Eddy, thinking at some point that may make its way out to the shed. Thought about putting solar panels like you did. I actually just run an extension cord into the shed. Like, that's, you know, it's code. It works. It's just an extension cord, right, that goes out there. I could unplug it at any time. And I've actually got it on a smart switch. I have it on two smart switches. And, the battery I was looking at, honestly, so Blue Eddy has has one of those new salt batteries, right? That can.
I've been seeing those, Is that what Samsung just announced too? I think they just announced some new phones that had the same thing.
I don't know.
Maybe it's a different kind of battery, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, they're sodium based, and that's the big kind of the big sales pitch on it was cold. Now, look at on your phone, this may actually have an application for a car, like, but these batteries don't have good cranking. I mean, the crank stuff on this, not as good as the lead acid, right? Lead acid's right. really good at that. But in the shed, I was thinking this would be the perfect marriage of solar panels and a battery that can charge, because this is the benefit of it, right? You and I both, we get sub-zero temperatures. You're in Ohio, I'm here in Nebraska. It gets super cold. And it would be nice to be able to have that battery out there with some, with, you know, I would probably put, you know, 400 to 600 watts on the shed. My shed roof gets maybe a fourth of the sunlight that I get out front. So I would need more panels just to kind of make up for it. But
sure.
That for me, that'd be great. It works and acts just like your EcoFlow, right?
Yeah.
It's in the shed. So I've thought about that.
Yeah, and honestly, I thought about, you know, doing the extension cord route, and it's like, I don't want to have that just laying across the yard and stuff like that. So
I do. Yeah. It's not, I know. It's yellow, so you see it.
Like, right.
It's not like it's green. They have green extension cords. I'm not trying to hide it from anybody. Right. I don't want to run it over or somebody to trip on it.
Just leave it there forever, you know.
But, you know, it's out there. I have thought several times.
Put some grass seed on it.
Burying a PVC pipe that is... And then just running the extension cord through the PVC pipe, right? It meets code. It's the same thing here in Bellevue where I live. If I had to wire it, I need to ground it. I need to pull a permit.
Mm-hmm.
I would need to, you would need the underground wiring.
Solar and battery at that point. Just do that. That's fine.
Well, no, it's about the same price, to be honest. By the time I do all that, you're like, I could just put a solar and battery in there. And then I'm kind of thinking, I could just plug it in. That actually just works if I do it that way. And
I considered adding like an inlet port on the outside of my shed just for an extension cord.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know what? You still might want to think through that from just a usage standpoint. You may get in a situation where you're in the shed and you're working and the battery power is low and you're like,
yeah,
just have an extension cord on the ready. I don't know how far is your shed from actual power. Mine's pretty close.
Not that far. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So nice inlet. It's wired in, comes into a breaker, comes into a breaker, and then I've got little stuff wired in on the inside. But it kind of works. That works. In my shed is mostly for cocktails and cigars.
There you go.
So I have fans. I've wired in bathroom fans in there so that it exhausts the air out.
Nice.
So, and then I've got an inlet. I've got an inlet on one side and outlet on the other, and so it comes on and vents the place. But that would be a perfect scenario for this kind of technology, right? To be able to do. Are you thinking about expanding your batteries out there at all? Or is the 1 kilowatt hour fine for you? You're just going to keep going with what you have for now.
Well, so I made a terrible decision when I bought my battery. I bought the EcoFlow Delta 3 Classic, I think it is.
Yeah, you should have brought the 3.
I should have. I didn't. You know, I didn't realize it was like
that's
every other piece
so
of technology.
That's why it was
you know
so
what
cheap,
I mean, right?
To be honest.
So this one doesn't have a battery expansion port on it. But if you look at YouTube, everybody's found a way to get around that and basically hook a different battery up to it. And so I might do that. I might just put this one like somewhere else and buy a different battery that can actually use an expansion.
Yeah.
But once I send this printer back, I don't think I have to worry about the expansion at this moment. So,
yeah,
no. You know, until I get the next project in there.
Those golf cart batteries, those 5 kilowatt hour golf cart batteries are popular. By the way, they're not any more expensive than like a 2 kilowatt hour battery. So if you could get that hooked in, you could probably leave that battery at 24/7 and then just take your, you know, basically using your EcoFlow as a charge controller at that point and kind of make it work that way. You could mod it. You could kind of hot mod it to make it work. That wouldn't be bad idea. We had talked in the Discord group. By the way, if you want to join the Discord group, theaverageguy.tv/Discord. If you talked about getting it connected. And that's the challenge because it's Bluetooth, right? I mean, those things, your version, now the bigger ones are Wi-Fi. So you could, you know, with the bigger ones, you could have put with a Wi-Fi extender, you could get out there. It's been challenged a little bit. Have you gotten past that somehow or how are you working the Bluetooth on that thing?
Yeah. So my battery does have Wi-Fi built into it, but the API does not work with that specific model.
Okay.
And so I haven't been able to get it work with Home Assistant until recently. And I was able to get it to work with Bluetooth. And so I had a little AI help with that part of it, because I couldn't figure that out. You know, I was trying the API integration forever, and it's just like, nope, nothing works. And it said it would find it, but it wouldn't actually find it and everything. Yeah. And the Bluetooth integration works great.
Did you, okay, I had OpenClaw help me with mine. Did you, which AI helped you get yours working?
I had Hermes. So I've used OpenClaw before, but I think you're a little more nerdy than I am. So I need like an installer and like a UI. You know, I would have never survived the 80s or 90s on a computer. And so for me, like I tried to use OpenClaw and I had it set up and I could not use it. It was way too complicated. But you know, I've been hearing you, and I think I've been hearing Gavin and Seth talk about Hermes. And Hermes is very easy. You can install it via command line if you want to, or they literally just make a desktop installer.
Yeah.
And once you install the desktop app, it works just like a normal program. So it's very easy to use.
Yeah. And so you got Hermes up. What are you using with Hermes? Which LLM? How do you have it configured? Do you know?
That's the part I'm struggling with. So I have it configured with OpenAI currently.
Okay.
But I've been trying a lot of stuff. I use the built-in one.
Yeah, they have a
news
bunch
portal
of
or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you say that now. Then I've been using Obama. Mm-hmm. And a couple others. So I've been trying out all of them.
Yeah.
It's you know, depending on what I'm trying to do, I guess. That's the problem, is I don't know is what is good at what. And so I'm my use case, I think, is very basic.
I think you're probably fine. If you've got it up and running, and you know, I've got a for OpenClaw, I use the OAuth version of ChatGPT. So I pay $20 for it a month. It's the only one I'm paying for at the moment. I can connect that. Now they rate me, so you can't go full throttle on ChatGPT, you know, in a GPT client all the time. I get a certain number of hours a week. Lately, they've gotten really, really generous with that. So if you've got the ChatGPT $20 plan, you can. I haven't done this on Hermes. I'm just using, when you log in, they kind of have one that comes with it. And I don't know how long it's going to work for, but I'm like, okay, we'll give this a try. Every once in a while, they'll throw an LLM at you. They're like, okay, this is free for the next 2 weeks. Give it a try, right? You know, they're trying to get these things out there. I do use the command line. So I go in and go to the config and see what's available and some of those kinds of things. But pretty easy setup from that standpoint. I haven't paid on Hermes. I haven't paid for a single LLM token yet.
Nice. That's I need to find out what you're doing.
That's been a pretty. I'll ship you the current LLM that I'm on. I'll send you that. What we're doing, that's available. I haven't. One of the things I haven't done is the desktop app for that. Is that you're doing that on Mac?
Yeah, I'm doing the Mac desktop app. It's pretty nice, honestly. And I have it set up with Telegram, and so I can just message you know, my Telegram bot and have it do things.
Okay. Yeah.
But I've been using a lot more, like whenever I'm on the computer, I've been just using the actual Hermes app.
Yeah.
And I think it works great.
It's awesome.
You know, it's not like a super nerd product. You know what I mean? Obviously it is, because it's AI and all that good stuff, but like it seems like it's designed by people that actually know about user interface.
Yeah.
Which is hard to do.
Or usability. Technology. I mean, it just kind of works. It's been working really well for me. If you've been reading my articles, you know, I've been putting out posts on OpenClaw and Hermes. Hermes is my YouTube manager. And for the longest time, I had set them up with like different authorization rhythms and cycles and some of those kinds of things. And one day I was just like, okay, we got to fix this, because things it was getting confused and it didn't know. It was checking one channel and it was saying, hey, this is not authorized anymore. So we're trying to fix it on another channel. I said, okay, we're not walking away till we get this fixed. And it went through and got them all straightened out and figured them out and got them going. I haven't had trouble with authorizations ever since. So it is, even though you say it's nerdy, I think once you get going, I don't know what your experience was, but mine, I got super frustrated in the beginning and I almost gave up, and then I went to bed, and then the next day I came back to it. I was like, okay, let's try it one more time. And then it worked.
Yeah.
And I was like, so if you're trying this, if you're following my journey, or now TJ's journey with Hermes, and Gavin's too. Gavin's super nerdy.
But he's out there,
He knows the code stuff. Are you guys talking about that much on Home Tech?
I think, honestly.
Is that coming up?
Honestly, they talk about it. Seth and Gavin talk about it all the time, but I got to be honest. I shut my eyes. Yeah, because it's just like, I don't know. I don't care about most of the AI stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't interest me in a lot of things. But I knew if I was coming on the show, Jim, I would have to talk about it. So, you know, yeah. I came prepared. I did my homework and yeah. I've been using AI for things. So
what's the best, like for you, what's the best use? Like what are you getting out of it? You're most proud of at this point?
I would say literally the only thing I'm using it for at this point is Home Assistant.
Yeah.
If you use Home Assistant, I'm sure you understand that like sometimes it's just overly complex
yeah.
or there's stuff hidden in different menus and it's hard to know exactly what to do. And so with Hermes, I've been able to do a lot of like home automation and dashboard design. And so I've always struggled with dashboards. I'm not going to learn YAML, not my thing. I've read so many guides, and I've watched so many videos, I've read so many like Reddit posts and everything. And I'm just like, I don't have the patience or time for this. And so, you know, I gave Hermes a command and I was like, you know, go out and I want you to learn everything about the two interfaces I think are the nicest, which is Josh AI and HomeKit. Josh AI is a professional voice automation platform. And then obviously HomeKit's out there. And so I was like, go out and learn everything you can about these two platforms and tell me when you're done. And as you know, went out and I think it took 10 or 15 minutes and learned about all these dashboards and user interfaces and stuff. And I was like, you know, take what you've learned now and go out and make me a dashboard. And I started very easily. I was like, just redesign my garden tab for me. And, you know, it redesigned the garden tab. It did a pretty good job. It did what I think is the stereotypical AI color scheme where it's just like a gradient yeah. background, you know? And I was like, that, you know, that's whatever. You know, it's better than whatever the default black was or whatever. And it made some pretty nice dashboards, to be honest.
It really does. It's sort of. There's been some moments I've given it some things to do. Here, let me show you a couple examples. Let me share my screen. Let's see if we can. I don't do this very often. So
yeah, I was trying to share my actual app, but of course I didn't install the permissions before the show.
Oh, that's okay. You can get that. Let's see.
I'll show some pictures of mine.
Get over to that one. I think I can.
But what's nice, honestly, about the whole AI thing is that like I'm just, you know, I tell it to go do something and it comes back with something and I'm like, I don't like whatever you did there. Change that somehow.
Exactly.
It just goes and changes it and like I don't have to lift a finger. And you can see it in real time, you know, as it starts editing everything, it just, yep. you see it happening and you can see exactly what it is.
Early on, I wanted to track my OAuth hours that I had. It was like, how am I going to keep up with this? OpenAI it's buried in a script. It's part of an API. I had to go out and grab those. And so it built this dashboard for me. If I click on this, refresh my GPT, it says 5.5. It's really 5.6 now at this point. But if you click on that, it's now behind the scenes running the script. You can kind of see I've got some usage data. I know it's small screen for you guys, so I'm not going to change it so you can see it. But it's, you know, I've got some usage. There used to be a 5-hour reset on this API. And in the middle of the night, just OpenAI took it away. They're like, we're not going to do 5 hours anymore. It's a weekly allotment and you're done. It just broke. It did break my dashboards. You see here. On the screen, that is where the 5-hour refresh used to be. It broke it. By the way, I spent with OpenClaw, I spent maybe 3 hours trying to figure out what had happened to that. It was trying to fix it. And then we just came to the conclusion at one point, it was like, oh, it went out and checked Reddit. And it was like, oh, yeah, no, people have been complaining about that 5-hour disappearing. So I guess it's not coming back, right, from that standpoint. But you get dashboards, you know, here's my home automation setup, right? So this is a pretty standard Home Assistant looking dashboard, right?
Yeah.
When we think about the color scheme on that, these are all the sensors. I just have one page that's got all the sensors on it. And then the one, you know, here's my perimeter. So this gets all the Ring cam that's in there, all the lights that are associated with everything that's outside. By the way, this perimeter dashboard that you're looking at right now, 100% built by OpenClaw. Now, it could be Hermes. Hermes could do the exact same thing on this. So 100% like, hey, I haven't brought in any of my cameras yet. And it was like, well, let's inspect what's available in your Home Assistant. And it started doing some things. And then it made this dashboard for me. You can see the batteries are here. You can see the cameras are there. And then I built the Storm Advisor. Now, this is ugly, right? But these are all text-based storm alerts. So when the National Weather Service issues a storm warning for anything, well, there's no way to graphically represent that. That's just a storm warning, right? And so this is what's kind of tracking for my batteries. I've got a whole thing going on which is tracking the batteries. This is the whole dashboard component behind it. Again, 100% built by that. And then the last one, the cool one, this is the one that I watch all the time.
Ooh, all the graphs.
Yeah, this is the one I watch all the time, which is super cool. These are the batteries. You can see the batteries in the center there, right here. These are the batteries and the percentage, what's coming in, what's going out. The coolest thing is these four down here. So this is slow charge on the left and quick charge on the right. And when the National Weather Service issues a storm watch, right, that's the lowest form of that, these click on automatically and start slow charging the batteries. Like, hey, we should probably get ready for a disaster. And then in a warning, right, which is the most severe, it kicks it over to fast charge. So it gets it as charged up as fast as it can, right? That's all. Idea. It was cool. I wish it was my idea. That was EcoFlow's idea. In your EcoFlow app, they have something called StormGuard that you could do. I stole that for the Blue Eddy. So I do it for both the EcoFlow and the Blue Eddy. What's cool about this now, TJ, it took me 2 or 3 days to build these to get it right, right? Kind of thing. But 100%, you know, built by that. And so you get some idea when you're talking about building dashboards. Pretty cool way. And I would never be able to build these dashboards. Home Assistant is impossible. Like maybe Gavin can do it, but Jim Collison cannot build these dashboards.
I mean, I 100% agree. That's how I am too. It's just like, and honestly, I just don't want to spend the time to do it. You know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, I just want to be able to like turn my lights on and everything. Yeah. And I really don't care how it looks. It would be nice if it looked nicer, you know, but it doesn't have to look nicer. Yeah.
Hey, by the way, I've got Seth coming on in 2 weeks. He's going to come on. So he may challenge some of these things that we're talking about here, but TJ, we're showing now your Home Assistant. Walk us through what you got.
Yeah, so this is all 100% AI generated. It made all this. I started all these tabs are what I started with, and so those are all the rooms I came up with, and that's what I've been using for the past year or so. But you know, it created these nice little sub menus. For example, if I click on kitchen, it goes to the kitchen tab. You know, I don't know how to do that. I'm not going to learn how to do that either. I'm just going to be lazy and swipe over to the kitchen tab. Yeah. You know, so it's certain stuff like that. This is what I call the stereotypical AI gradient background. Every time I see somebody that makes an AI dashboard, it kind of looks similar to this. It might be a different color. But it went through and just made stuff a little bit nicer looking.
Yeah.
So here's my garden tab, for example. What I told it to do is I said, hey, take my garden tab and I want you to make it a little bit nicer. I want you to condense it and make it easier to use. And so what it did is I basically had 3 or 4 different cards before. You know, it had the plant itself, it had the watering option, it had the soil moisture and all this other stuff. And what it did is just combined everything into one tab. And so I just click on cucumbers, for example, and it goes to the cucumbers, or I click on cantaloupe and it does that.
That's great.
And so it's just, you know, simple stuff like that where I'm not going to learn how to do it, nor do I have the patience to do it. It's great for that.
Yeah. It's JP Simmons says, ah, scotch bonnets.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, for you and me both, I was not good at building dashboards or automation. And this is one of the areas where the AI, because I kind of locked down OpenClaw in the very beginning, I said, look, I don't want you getting wild and sneaking out of my network and start getting my bank account. Like basically like stay in your lane. So it's been pretty conservative, but with the, like when I set up the storm guard, I kind of walked through the process. Okay, let's make sure we get all the sensors set up first. So it set up all the sensors. We got them working. It set up a little dashboard so we could click on them. And then it was like, okay, now that we have the sensors, let's get the automation piece going with the National Weather Service. And Home Assistant, of course, has a plugin for 2 weather service, Mateo or whatever they call that, National Weather Service. And it was like, okay, let's start. And we actually monitored both services for a couple weeks to see which one was the most accurate and which was the best one to use. The temptation on some of these is you're like, oh yeah, API, grab the data. I'm going to depend on it. Boom. And it was like, hey, let's observe this for a little bit to see what comes in. So we built some dashboards to observe and see what was happening. And then at one point where it was like, okay, I've got enough data. The National Weather Service is what we're going to pull for this. And then I actually had a conversation with ChatGPT about, okay, which warnings should and which watches should I really be worried about? Like, which one causes power outage?
Right, because you only want the important ones, right? I mean, like, it's not like you want to be notified all the time.
Heat watch. Well, okay, that's not going to, in most cases, that's not going to knock the power out. So it helped me kind of build the conditions to give the assistant, to give the AI and say, all right, these conditions are what I want you to do. Then I want you to interact with those sensors. The beauty of that was the automation, because there's no way in a million years I would have ever figured out how to do that on Home Assistant that way. And it just was like, okay, you know. And then the cool part of it was we had a storm come through, and I jumped into OpenClaw and was like, hey, we have a storm. I started with ChatGPT because it's been kind of my designer. We have a storm coming through. What should I tell OpenClaw? And it started giving me prompts to give OpenClaw, and we tested the whole process through the storm, you know? And so it was super cool to be able to kind of validate it. And when we got done, it was like 11 o'clock at night. It was like, hey, congratulations. You did a whole walkthrough of like a production process that was, and of course it was super nice to me. Is Hermes nice to you? Do you feel like whatever AI you're using, whatever LLM is super nice to you?
I'm sure this is a setting somewhere, but I feel like it's just very formal, you know, just tells me what it does. And like, yeah. That's it. It's not nice and doesn't try to suck up to me or anything. I feel like Seth has talked about his, and he says that his maybe is intoxicated or something else, because it's like always forgetting stuff and saying, you know, sorry, stuff. Mine just like straight to the point.
It can. Yeah. I've had mine say, oh, my bad. And they're like, no, you don't get to
I think that's
bad.
What his says. Yeah.
You don't get to have bads.
It's like, what do you mean, my bad? You're a computer.
Hold on. Before you go, let's get a little chat in here, because I think we got some good stuff. It says, I gave Claude a screenshot of an invalid PoE camera, and it figured out that it was the TVT-based firmware and corrected the config file. Oftentimes I've had with OpenClaw. Now, let's be just real clear. OpenClaw is the orchestrator. It's ChatGPT behind the scenes that's doing the work.
Sure.
Right. For me, it's doing the work. And I've had a couple times we've had problems. And it's like, could you take a screenshot? That's what it's asked me. Would you just take a screenshot and show me what you're seeing? Because I can't figure it out from your gibberish, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, so, I've taken a screenshot of like a notification or something and sent it to Hermes. And I'm like, figure out what this is. And it does. It reads the screenshot and it figured out whatever the problem was.
Seth says Henry developed an alcohol issue or something.
That's his AI. So AI is always forgetting and always saying sorry or my bad.
Might be the problem. It's got a little too much Canadian whiskey. Little rye is what they call it up there. That's one of the problems with some of these LLMs is their context, right? And TJ, and some of the work you and I are doing on this, we're just dumping tons of context into the chat, right? We're giving it stuff. I want you to do all this stuff. It has to eventually start dropping off some of that context because it's just too much. That's where it starts forgetting, because it's dropped the context. Right. And so it does some things like, oh, yeah, I don't remember. Makes sense. Some of the LLMs have pretty small context. This is where it's important to have, you know, the frontier models have giant contexts. So you can do some pretty amazing. I think you can do some pretty amazing stuff with them.
I feel like I feel like AI is a perfect tool. I don't know if it's just me. It might just be me. But I feel like AI is a perfect tool for people with ADHD. Because you can just like info dump on it and it does not care. It processes as it needs to. Yeah. And it's perfect for that, because I just send mine stuff all the time. Like, I just figure it out, you know, and I can't do that to a person.
Well, and you can also, I've done things where I've sent, you know, I've been working with ChatGPT and I've sent stuff over to OpenClaw and it's running. And I'm like, okay, it's still running on OpenClaw. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
And so we totally change subjects. And we'll have three or four chats about something completely different. The OpenClaw piece will come back. I'll copy and paste that into the prompt, and it's like just picks right up where it left. You know. However, the other day I was working, just yesterday, I was working on, we were trying to get, when I first set up OpenClaw, I didn't do any Git processes. So I wasn't tracking anything or committing anything or tracking changes or any of that stuff. Then about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the OpenClaw says to me, we should probably start tracking things. Like, you got enough stuff here. We should start tracking stuff. And then I started going through, okay, let's clean this up. And I was going through all these cleanups. And then I realized it wasn't actually doing anything. It was just going through the motions. And I said, are you drifting? Like, and it was like, oh, this was to Seth's my bad. This was like, oh yeah, we should probably stop doing this. This isn't very productive. You know, it's kind of like, when were you going to tell me that? You know,
never.
I interrupted. Were you going to show something? I interrupted you at some point. Anything?
No, I was going to talk about my automations that Hermes has been helping me on. Yeah. So that's kind of the other thing that I've been, with all the irrigation going on, I basically set up very basic automations, and I was like, every day at certain times, go ahead and water everything. And the goal, obviously, with the soil moisture sensors and everything, was to tie that in so that way it only waters the garden bed when it's absolutely necessary, right? And so when the soil moisture drops below a certain percentage, that's when you actually water everything. And that way you're not wasting water, right? Because too much water can kill a plant, and it's also just a waste of water. Water can get expensive. Although I think in the Midwest we're pretty lucky with water pricing. And so what I did is I said, Hermes, go out and I want you to look at every single automation that says watering on it. And I think it's like 13 different automations for watering at the moment. And I was like, look at all those automations and I want you to tell me what's wrong with them and what can improve with them. And I was like, great. So it went out and the only thing I really had set was that if it's rained in the past day, and it's rained more than, a certain percentage or a certain amount, don't water. And what it decided to do is like, hey, we need to add that the weather station, it needs to be dry in order for it to actually water. And I was like, that's a good one. Go ahead and make that one. The other thing is, the obvious one, it was like, hey, right now you're not really incorporating your soil moisture sensors into anything. And so what you should do is every bed that you have a soil moisture sensor in, you should just set a threshold. And if it's, above 40%, soil moisture, you don't water at all. And I was like, great, go ahead and implement that. And so I added that to every single automation. And so now, if soil moisture is below 40%, that's when it waters. And if it's above 40%, it doesn't water at all. And obviously now I have to go through and actually fine tune all those, right? Because all the garden beds are different. We have peppers and tomatoes and everything else. And so all those need something different. But it was smart enough to realize that I have all these sensors that aren't actually incorporated in the automation, but they're in the same area and they're named the same thing, and that we should put those in the automations.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yes. And when it gets it right, it's amazing. Like, I've gotten some things right. That storm guard, when I got it working that night and we went through the whole storm and it worked, I was like, oh my God, I am a genius. Like, I'm a genius. I have figured this out, right? It did this stuff. AI is great. This is going to be amazing. Not 2 days later, I sent my Amazon affiliate manager off to inspect my Amazon affiliate links on the website. And it's a pretty simple task. Hey, just sure. Do an audit of all the Amazon affiliate links and let's fix them, right? Pretty simple task. It went out. It's like, oh yeah. Oh, you got plenty of opportunities here. Let's start fixing them. And it didn't even ask for my permission. It just started fixing them, except it started rewriting the whole page so that it changed it. I had a bunch of Gutenberg format for the WordPress. Nope. Changed it in classic HTML. Cause it was like, it didn't want to be bothered by Gutenberg. Like, I don't want to be bothered. That's too hard. Right. I had to go back and undo and fix. I'm still finding things it messed up in that process because I didn't give it enough. I gave it autonomy without really testing its authority.
Like, yeah.
It was like, I think there are moments, like we have these stories, like you say, like, oh yeah, I just gave it that. And it just found some stuff. There's also times you give it stuff and then you come back and you're like, what to Seth's point, like, what are you doing? Are you drunk? Did you, like, it's just out watering all the time. And it was like, oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was my bad, whatever. And so there are certain times in that, where I think you got to be careful with the guardrails you're giving it, you know, to make sure it's kind of staying on track.
Yeah. When I started mine up, I told it to become a project manager. And so I was like, you need to go out and you need to learn what it's like to manage stuff.
Yeah.
Because eventually I'm going to make sub agents. So I made a couple sub agents. I made like a home assistant sub agent and a couple other ones. And, you know, the one agent manages the other one. But part of that learning process, I guess, was that it verifies everything with me first. And so it's like, it comes back and it's like, hey, you know, these are the changes we would recommend. This is the order I would do it in or whatever. And I'm like, great, do 1, 3, 5, 7, you know, implement those ones.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if that made a big difference or not, but I haven't had that problem yet.
Good.
But I did almost accidentally attach it to an API for every single Ubiquity site that I have, which is not a good thing. So that I had to kill that very quickly. So I'm sure that could have gone bad very quickly.
Pull the plug. You're like, stop.
Yeah. I was like, oh, what's going on? I don't know. Wrong one. Forget everything you learned.
Yeah. For me, the learning curve has been highs, like really high highs and really low lows. There's some moments I've been like, I'm going to delete that thing. I mean, the version of OpenClaw is my third version because the first two were kind of disasters. And I was like, this is not working the way I intended to work. I hadn't been patient enough with it. I was asking it to do everything at once, as opposed to, and defining all the things that I want. Gavin said this when he was on the podcast weeks ago, and he's the one that sparked my, like, this is where the light bulb came on of saying, give them all roles. Mm-hmm. Give them, like, you are a fill in the blank, right?
Yeah.
And the more you can prescribe the role and what your expectations are of them, I think the better outcome that you'll get from that experience. So, that was certainly super helpful to me. I was like, oh, okay. And that's when I spun up Hermes right after the show. I spun up Hermes to be like, okay, you're going to be my YouTube manager. Like, you need to know everything there is to know about YouTube and SEO and some of those kinds of things. And so it's been super helpful ever since, except the authorization bit.
Yeah.
It's probably my fault. I also find sometimes when it goes off track, might be a night I've had a little too much whiskey and I've let it go a little too far. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So lots of chatter going on. Boy, the chat room was super quiet for the first half when we were talking about sheds, but bring up a little bit of AI and it kind of lights up out there.
Everybody's interested in AI. No, yeah. No sheds. Nobody's interested in sheds.
I love
Jim's interested in sheds. That's what matters.
I love my shed. That's why we started the show with sheds, because I love my sheds. Yeah. Anything else, TJ? Anything else on your in your Hermes journey that's been particularly helpful or that you've learned in the process?
Not really. I mean, I've been slowly getting into other things. I gave it access to my Ubiquity network. And so I was like, you know, here's an API after I gave it the correct one. Here's an API for my network. Look at it, you know, recommend any changes. It didn't really come back with that many changes. It came back with 4 or 5 changes, nothing crazy. I wanted to rename one of my access points, which I wasn't a fan of, but so it's funny. Actually, I give all my stuff very boring names. So, you know, I name it like AP Backyard and all that stuff. But my main API, I call it APP. Yeah, you know me. And it was like, it analyzed that. And it was like, well, you have your back one named like AP Backyard. You have your front one named AP Front Yard. And so it makes sense to name this one AP Main. And I was like, we're not doing that, Hermes. You need to calm down. So, but there wasn't a lot of things to change with the Ubiquity stuff. So, I haven't done anything with that, but, I don't know what I'm going to use it for next.
Yeah. Well, we'll catch up with you next time. Next time I have you on, we'll catch up with I still go through highs and lows. There's at some points I'm like, I don't know, maybe I'll shut this thing down. And, you know, and then there's other moments like, this is the greatest thing ever. And so, Seth said, wait a minute, I missed the shed talk.
Yeah, you did.
You came a little late. And then Joe said he was mowing during the shed talk.
Who manually mows anymore? Minus Jim. Justin, everybody has robot lawnmowers.
I know. Now. I still mow. It's my daughter said it's the only exercise I get, so I have to keep it up. Justin says sheds are great, but ironically, in a shed up the top of the facilities, guys working on something. So yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, I don't mention. So you guys, Joe, Seth, you have to go back and catch the early shed stuff. I have found what I have enjoyed. I'm not a particularly good writer. And so what I have found is giving ChatGPT my, I call it my content creator. And I'll spend, you know, I would never spend 2 or 3 hours writing, but I'll spend 2 or 3 hours working with ChatGPT on stuff it knows. Because since I work on all my projects with ChatGPT and it sees all the code, like all the things we're trying to do and all the problems we have, and every time I've yelled at it for doing dumb things, you know, it kind of knows, like, and so it'll pull those examples from, you know, stuff that I've actually done. The writing that of those posts that I've done is not generic, like, oh, I wish, or I want to, or it could be, or this is the best case scenario. Everything you'll read in those posts is stuff I've actually done, right? StormGuard is mentioned in there. Some other things. We had some struggles this last weekend that it, we're going to, post 9, we'll have some of those things. Like, we shouldn't, the whole Git repository, it was like, you know, you really ought to be tracking. You got a lot of work here. You ought to be tracking this in some way that we could go back and figure out what you've done in the past.
You're like, I don't want to look at my mistakes again. What are we talking about?
I know, I know. Or its mistakes.
Right.
So
I want to know? I don't know if I want to know.
I have to remember it's generative too. And it has different opinions about the way to do things kind of based on the time frame and the information it has. Because that context is limited, It may make a decision to do something one way. I mean, more than once I've had it back out its own decision.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be like, oh yeah, why did you do it that way? I'm like, I didn't do it that way. You did it that way. Oh, we shouldn't do it that way. And it'll start doing it a different way. And I'm like, whoa. Wait, what are you doing here? And it'll be like, you're right. Okay, let's slow down a little bit. Let me do some looking at this before we start doing stuff. You know, let me do a read only. That's actually saved my bacon several times of like, you have to say explicitly, don't do anything. Like, do a read-only survey or summary or overview. Don't change anything. Just tell me what's going on there.
Yeah, I always say analyze. I just need you to analyze the situation. You know, tell me what's going on with it.
Yeah. Do you ever think you'd let it do financial stuff for you?
I don't think so. I mean, what financial stuff would you have it do? Stock investing, I guess? That would be the only thing I would think of, right?
Stock or crypto, right? I mean,
maybe, because like I'm terrible about picking stocks, you know? Is AI better? Then I have to worry about, I guess, who's influencing the AI. You know, right now I look at like, you know, Reddit and Wall Street Bets, and that influences my decision, which is not good. But
I've thought about giving it a read-only version of my budget and being like, what could I be doing better? I've also thought about giving it my my credit card.
Amazon sounds awful, to be honest. It's like, you should stop buying all of this. I'm like, all right, delete. Turn off the computer immediately.
What is wrong with you? It'll be saying to you, what is wrong with you? Why are you buying all this crap?
Yeah, see, I don't need the judgmental stuff from AI, so.
I thought I'd give it, like, my credit card statements and to do some analytics on. Like, what are we buying? Like, what could we be doing different? Where are things that we could be doing better on? Where am I paying too much for stuff? So not access to my bank.
Sure. Not like being able to like transfer money.
I have a spreadsheet.
It's like I've decided to transfer, you know, $5,000 from your account to mine.
Well, not.
To the AI's bank.
I've decided you need to save more money. And so I'm cutting you off.
Right.
And you can't get to your savings account.
That would be my luck, right? You know, just be like, well, you're obviously the worst financial decision you can make. So.
Yeah. But I have thought about giving it the budget numbers separated from the bank and my credit card statement separated from the credit card and having like a month over month analysis. I kind of do, my budget's a 3-month rolling average. So I kind of, because some months spike and some months have extra. So rather than month by month, I used to do that a long time ago. So I've thought about that. Thought about giving OpenClaw the raw numbers and just saying, hey, well, I'm going to give you this month over month. I want you to help me reconcile it as well as give me some advice on what I could be doing differently. It would just say spend less.
Yeah.
Just spend less, you jackass. Right?
You don't need that negativity in your life.
I do, though.
You
know, sometimes.
You don't need that.
I'm kind of cheap. I actually might agree with it. That's a good plan. Yeah, I could. I probably shouldn't be buying those things that I, you know, I should, maybe I should walk to work.
Oh, open call. We'll be having you reusing paper towels at some point. It'll be like, you know, you can't afford paper towels. So
got one right here. TJ, what's going on over at hometech.fm? What do you guys, anything coming up that folks should know about? Head over and listen to?
Nothing big right now. If you like the AI talk, though, Gavin and Seth talk about AI so much. Honestly, I glaze over every single time they talk about it. That's how much they talk about it. So if you like the AI talk and learning what Seth and Gavin are doing with it, that is a perfect podcast to listen to.
I'm sorry.
Because they're always doing something.
Maybe you should just come over here and hang out with me a little bit.
That's what it sounds like, honestly.
I think it's so.
Yeah.
I mean, again, Seth is on in 2 weeks, so we'll have to see.
I'm glad he's finally on because he was crying a lot. You know, every time that I was on the show and Gavin was on the show, he's like, you know, Jim never invites me on and, you know, he doesn't like me and everything. I was trying to keep it quiet, to be honest, you know.
None of that's true, Seth. None of that's true. You know.
It'll be interesting, though, because we always give Seth grief on the show because he doesn't complete projects. And basically a project show. I mean, like, obviously you have different people on and everything like that, but it's a lot of projects, you know, it's a lot of project discussion. Yeah. And so Seth doesn't do a lot of projects that he actually completes. So he says he's got a couple of things to talk about, and I'm really excited to hear what they are because he doesn't talk about them on our show.
Finished things like podcasts and podcast episodes.
Yeah.
Right. Isn't he responsible for your?
No, he's literally. So we give Seth so much grief, but he is responsible for literally everything about the podcast.
Right.
Gavin and I show up on a weekly basis and Seth does all the work. So
freeloaders is what
100%
freeloaders.
But I don't feel bad now because Seth has AI doing a lot of stuff. So actually, Seth had AI redesign the website.
Yeah.
So if you go to our website, hometech.fm, that has completely redesigned with AI and it actually works. You know, it's a pretty nice website. And also it redesigned like our back end that we use for like our notes and stuff like that. So
holy buckets.
and Seth actually added a DTF or a did they finish section of the website. And it's actually a project completion because I complete projects like crazy.
32%.
Gavin and Seth do not.
Your completion rate right now. Hold on, we got to show this. Let me bring this in here. This is just too good.
And these are AI generated photos. He took our mug shots or whatever he found and had to put the suits and stuff on. I don't know why I have the top hat though. Nobody's explained it to me.
I think it's because you have the beard, right?
Maybe,
I think it's the beard and the top hat kind of go together. AI. But you know what? This is actually a really good looking site. I remember the old site. So Seth, good work.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute, Seth. You have 0%. You got the website up. That's a project that should count, right?
Did he do it though, or did AI do it?
Well, I mean, wait a minute. Why is Gavin at zero?
He hasn't completed any project. He doesn't do anything either. Really? Actually, I think the reason he's at 0% is because he still hasn't fixed his walls. So when I was up in Canada and he ripped open his walls,
here's the project list. Yeah, here's the project list. Yeah. So we saw these pictures, patching walls, front yard conversion, TJ's toxic shed. That's great. CTT sensors, big deck. If we go, can you go into these?
Yeah, if you click on the number itself, it'll go to it.
The number itself.
So finished in 580. We have to have AI fix that.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Yeah, the picture should be clickable. Get set.
Come on.
Get AI. Get AI.
Come on, Henry.
Is that Henry? Doing
those? Henry's his AI.
That's nice. Yeah. And so the deck is whose?
That's my deck. That's the floating deck that I built.
Nice.
So the peppermints are not real. Those are AI generated. So if you see those in the notes,
I did see those. Those are not real.
Neither are the peppermint trees either. You know,
it looks a little Willy Wonka.
We don't have that going on, unfortunately.
But you do have the sail,
sunshade sail
going on the top there.
It's fantastic.
So super cool. Well, listen, if you haven't checked out Home Tech Podcast in a while, check it out. Hometech.fm, brand new website. Seth, nice job on that. We'll talk a little bit about that. I am excited to talk to you, Seth, about the AI. I know you've gotten into that. I should have had you back sooner. I'm sorry. I just, things have been busy. I get in rhythms and routines. 2 weeks.
Seth's busy, so he's always late to the podcast recordings and stuff like that. So I mean, he's got a lot going on.
TJ, you know that he's important, so you can't expect a lot of.
I'm sure he's important to people. Yeah.
Oh, he's gonna hate me. Seth, don't hate me. I really am looking forward to having on in 2 weeks.
That's all right. He can talk smack about me when he's on in a couple weeks.
For sure. You and Gavin are under fire. It's gonna be great. Any future projects coming up there at the house? I mean, besides the garden stuff, you got any tech coming that you're excited about?
I don't think so at this moment. I need to slow down on the projects and probably save some money for, we're ramping up, I guess not ramping up, but we're going to go to CES again this coming year. So I wasn't going to. I really don't like Vegas. Vegas is not my place, not my thing. But Gavin is going back, and I was like, you know, if Gavin's going back, I'm going to go back too. It'll be nice. So I should probably save some money for that and slow down on the projects.
Okay. Listen, 1 year, so Dave McCabe and I used to go out there when we did Home Server Show. And I'd go out with them. And then 1 year I was like, I'm not going. I just hate it. So I did the whole thing. I was a producer in the studio here for the afternoons. And so I took half days. And I'd come home at noon. I'd get Dave. And we did live from Vegas the whole time. So maybe you could produce.
Yeah.
From the studio there. Just live updates from those guys. That was great. That was a long time ago. I hate Vegas.
Yeah, not a fan of Vegas itself. You know, it was nice to go socialize and hang out with people and stuff like that. But that's pretty much the reason I'm going.
Well, TJ, thanks. If you want to catch hometech.fm, head over there. They're way smarter than me. And so make sure that's in your podcast player. And a lot of great discussions. Although TJ, it seems like it's gotten pretty AI centered over the last.
It's a lot of AI. It's kind of like your show. You know, I would say a lot of your show's AI at this point. I feel like AI has just taken over everything. So
I think it has.
And I feel like it's slowly starting to become more accessible. You know, and I think it's one of those things that it's been kind of gate kept and a little bit hard to access for a lot of people. So I think it's becoming a little bit easier for people to manage and actually use. And I think once we get over the hump of everybody telling you that AI is in stuff, I think it'll be better.
Yeah.
You know, right now we're in the stage where it's like, we have AI. And it's like, what does the AI do? We don't know, but we have AI. And so once we get past that stage, I think everything will be better.
You're 100% right. You are 100% right.
It's kind of like when crypto came out, you know, it's like everybody was like, we have blockchain. And it's like, great. What are you using the blockchain for? It's like, it keeps track of things. What do you mean? What are we using it for? That's what we're using.
You call me out right now. Cause I went,
these past two crazes. I've not been a fan of.
You left out. I went hard on both. And I'm still very pro in crypto. And, I was listening to somebody the other day and they said, when AI takes over crypto, crypto will be the payment method for AI. And I thought, oh crap, like kind of makes sense. Like they both use tokens, you know, you kind of like, this could be interesting.
So just going to use Bitcoins at that point.
Yeah. Well, it could be. I mean,
I burned half a Bitcoin.
Crypto is the payment system of AI. I don't know, scary times. Anyways. Well, TJ, thanks for hanging out with me tonight. Always great to catch up with you and appreciate what you bring to it. And good work with you guys over there at hometech.fm. Like I said, they're a lot nerdier than me, minus TJ. He's the reasonable one. Seth and Gavin.
Oh, yeah, they go crazy.
No.
I just want to use stuff, you know. I like to use technology, but I don't want to think about it all the time.
Right on. You know? You're thinking about it. You're doing. Listen, you got terrible. Hermes. You're using Hermes.
Yeah,
got it working.
I just have it do things for me now, which is great. That's honestly what home automation should be, right? I should just be able to type into a prompt and tell it what to do. And I think honestly, that's kind of always been the struggle with home automation with the general consumer.
Yeah.
Is that like they just don't know how to like do anything.
Yeah.
And so I think once this comes actually to like user products, I think it'll be a big difference.
Okay. I was going to wrap it up, but let me ask you this
question. Let's continue.
Do you think Home Assistant will get its own AI?
I don't know if it'll get its own AI, but they've already integrated with Hermes and everything else into it. And so I think they'll just embrace that at some point.
When you say integrate, like, is it already, if I download something in a Home Assistant, is Hermes there now?
Yeah, you can install Hermes within Home Assistant.
Oh.
So, yeah, you can just run it right there. So I think that's going to make the biggest difference, right? Yeah. Because for me, it's like, you know, the examples I gave tonight of the automations and the dashboards and stuff like that. The average consumer, they just want to tell something what to do.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I want my lights to turn on tonight at 8 p.m. and make that happen every other day. And if the average consumer can do that, I think they'll actually embrace it at that point.
I think you're right. I don't think we're far. That makes a lot of sense to be able to do that. You know, when I said, hey, I want you to integrate my dashboard with the National Weather Service. And so this is my National Weather Service dashboard. And it brings all in the pressures and the stability index and winds, you know, the wind spread. And I actually have, I've got different weather locations set up by distance. So I can track storms coming in, kind of deal. Maybe not quite average guy stuff, but you could do it. It's pretty simple.
Sure.
You know, it was one of those kinds of things you could be like, yeah. And then you can have that conversation like, is that enough? I had this conversation. Is that enough weather stations? Like, should we get more? And it was like, Jim, I think you're good. And this is the first time I've ever had somebody say, an AI say, Jim, I think we have enough.
Yeah.
I think we have enough now. Yeah. So I agree with you. I think AI was made for Home Assistant in a lot of ways, or the other way around, one of the two. So, well, TJ, thanks. A couple reminders. Can you hang around with me while I close this up?
Absolutely.
You okay? Couple reminders on the way out. TheAverageGuy.tv, powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from folks that you know and you trust. You know that's Christian. We talked last week about, hopefully you've contacted him in some way, Christian at TheAverageGuy.tv, about adding the Bitwarden piece into, he wants to host that for you so you can have kind of your own instance, doesn't need to be on Bitcoin or on Bitwarden. Talked about that last week. If you haven't caught 684, go back and listen to that. But he's working on that, and certainly interesting. If you're using Bitwarden today, you might want to catch that as well. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv/live if you want to head out there. Phil Hawthorne, you haven't met him yet, but you're going to meet him next week. Reached out to me and said, hey, I got some interesting things to talk about. So join me next week for Phil. And then in 2 weeks, Seth Johnson's coming on, Seth from hometech.fm. I'm sure Seth will have some things to say about Gavin and TJ. You going to listen? You going to join us, TJ?
I'll hopefully join live.
You know, in the chat room. You think Henry will join us in the chat room?
Hopefully.
I hope so. Seth, can you spin that up for us? Henry was great the last time he was.
That was pretty good, honestly.
Yeah, he was pretty great. Right behind Seth, Jay Franzi's coming back. And you could join us live. Big thanks, Seth, Brian, Joe, Justin. John Biggs was out there a little bit earlier. He had to leave. I think I saw Ken and Brian a little bit earlier. Thanks for you guys joining us in the chat room. Always great to have you. We'll do a short little post show. But that was a good one.
Where the screens glow bright and the Wi-Fi peaks. If you're looking for the tech talk you can actually keep, then settle on in with Home Gadget Geeks.